Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Monkey Business: Swinging Through the Wall Street Jungle is a memoir and workplace satire by John Rolfe and Peter Trube that recounts their early careers as junior associates at Donaldson, Lufkin & Jenrette, a major Wall Street investment bank. Rather than celebrating finance as a glamorous path, the book examines the pressure, fatigue, and absurdity that often define entry-level investment banking. Its purpose is partly humorous and partly corrective. It strips away the polished image of Wall Street and shows the routine labor behind deals, presentations, and constant demands from senior bankers. The book is best understood as an insider account of the culture of elite banking, especially the long hours, hierarchical control, and burnout that can shape young professionals. Because it is written from the perspective of two newcomers who expected prestige and discovered grueling labor, the book becomes both a memoir of disillusionment and a critique of the industry's working norms. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the gap between Wall Street glamour and daily analyst reality. A central theme of the book is the contrast between the prestige associated with investment banking and the repetitive, exhausting work that junior bankers actually perform. Rolfe and Trube enter DLJ expecting wealth, access, and excitement, but their day-to-day reality is dominated by formatting documents, preparing materials, and responding to urgent requests on tight deadlines. This gap matters because it exposes how recruiting narratives can oversell the profession while hiding its operational grind. The book does not deny that investment banking can offer compensation and status, but it shows that these rewards are paired with heavy sacrifice, especially at the bottom of the hierarchy. By focusing on the mismatch between expectation and experience, the memoir becomes a cautionary account for anyone attracted to finance by reputation alone. It suggests that the true cost of entry is not just time, but the acceptance of a work culture that treats exhaustion as normal. Secondly, a hierarchical culture where senior bankers shape every aspect of work. The book portrays investment banking as an intensely hierarchical environment in which junior employees have little control over their schedules or workload. Senior partners and vice presidents dominate the flow of work, impose deadlines, and expect constant responsiveness, often creating pressure that feels unreasonable to those below them. This structure is important because it explains why the job becomes so draining. The stress is not just from volume, but from the unpredictability and authority-driven nature of the office culture. Rolfe and Trube describe an ecosystem where young associates are expected to absorb chaos without complaint, while senior figures operate with near-total discretion. The result is a workplace that rewards endurance more than judgment and compliance more than creativity. The book uses this hierarchy to reveal how power functions inside elite finance, showing that status is maintained through dependence, not collaboration. In that sense, the memoir is also an analysis of how professional cultures can normalize one-sided demands. Thirdly, overwork and burnout as the defining cost of the profession. One of the book's strongest recurring ideas is that the culture of investment banking exacts a personal toll that goes far beyond temporary fatigue. The authors repeatedly emphasize the punishing hours, sleepless nights, and emotional depletion that come with the job, presenting burnout as a structural feature rather than an exception. This matters because it shifts the discussion from individual toughness to organizational design. The problem is not simply that young bankers lack stamina, but that the system is built around unsustainable expectations. The memoir is especially revealing in its attention to the long-term consequences of this lifestyle, including stress, strained relationships, and a sense that many senior bankers have sacrificed normal personal lives for professional success. By showing junior associates looking ahead and deciding they do not want to become the people above them, the book makes burnout a moral as well as physical issue. It stands as an early, vivid critique of careers that ask employees to trade stability and health for proximity to power. Fourthly, Wall Street as an oligopoly driven by deal control and scale, beyond the personal anecdotes. The book offers a useful structural insight into investment banking major deals are controlled by a small number of large firms with the scale and reputation to compete at the top. This oligopolistic picture helps explain why the industry feels so competitive and why prestige matters so much in recruiting and client work. The author's point is not a technical economic analysis, but a practical observation that the market is concentrated and access is limited. That concentration intensifies pressure inside firms because everyone is fighting for position in a narrow field where a few players dominate the biggest opportunities. It also explains the culture of urgency, since each firm is trying to preserve its place among the industry leaders. The book is valuable here because it connects internal office behavior to the broader structure of the financial sector. In doing so, it shows that the grind at DLJ is not isolated. It is tied to the competitive logic of elite Wall Street itself. Lastly, humor as a way to expose a harsh professional world, The book is not written as a dry workplace complaint. Its humor is one of the main reasons it remains memorable. Because satire allows the authors to describe excessive expectations, absurd meetings, and distorted priorities without turning the memoir into a purely bitter account. The comic tone makes the criticism more effective rather than arguing abstractly that Wall Street is unhealthy. The authors let the ridiculousness of the situation speak for itself. This approach also gives the book a broader appeal, especially for readers who may not know finance, but understand the frustration of bad management and unrealistic work environments. The humor does not soften the message so much as sharpen it, because it highlights how normal the abnormal has become inside the industry. At the same time, the comedic style keeps the memoir readable and accessible, which helps explain its popularity among business students and aspiring bankers. The result is a book that functions as both entertainment and institutional critique. In conclusion, Monkey Business will be most useful to business students, aspiring investment bankers, young professionals considering finance, and general readers interested in the real culture of Wall Street. Its practical value lies in its candid depiction of what junior banking life can actually feel like: long hours, constant pressure, hierarchical control, and limited personal autonomy. Intellectually, it helps readers understand how elite financial firms operate not just as businesses, but as cultures with their own incentives and norms. What makes the book stand out in its genre is its combination of memoir, satire, and insider observation. Compared with more formal finance books, it is less about strategy or markets than about lived experience. Compared with more sensational Wall Street narratives, it is grounded in the mundane realities of office labor and burnout. That balance gives it lasting relevance. It is funny, but it is also a serious warning about the hidden costs of prestige careers. Readers looking for a realistic portrait of investment banking will find it more revealing than promotional accounts and more human than technical industry analysis. If you would like to support John Rolfe, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.